We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other thing. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
All right, a bunch of people I talked to said that they want more of that judo guy, Nico. One of the longtime black belts I trained with said, I didn't understand what he was saying, but I like him.
Yeah, that's very flattering.
Yeah, in a fucked up kind of way. I hear the forks and the plates.
Forks and the plates, yes. I'm just finished eating my dog. He was so annoying that I decided to fuck it, I'll cut him.
Well, man, you love the guy, so that's a good way to honor him, is just to eat the fucker.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, he's so dumb. You know, if you want to have a best dog in the world, then buy a miniature Bull Terrier. This is the most stupid and dumb dog ever. But I guess it makes him. It's a beauty of the thing.
So let's talk a little judo today.
Okay. Always up to little judo.
According to the IJF, over 40 million people around the globe practice judo. And when I first started, I think I heard this kind of rumor that's very popular, right? That judo is the second most practiced sport in the world. Have you heard that before?
Yes, I did. And it's actually true, but it's very highly depends on the country. I mean, again, on the region. Like we talked before, it would be totally untrue and the furthest thing from true in the United States. But if you go to Europe, like France, in France, judo is the second sport after soccer.
I guess soccer is pretty big there too, yeah.
Yeah, no, soccer is the biggest sport in the world, period, fact. I mean, it's just the biggest sport in the world. However, in some countries, because I have lived in France, I have lived in Germany, I've been in Japan, I've been in a bunch of countries. And I'll tell you this, that soccer is undoubtedly number one in all of them. Yeah. And then it depends on the region. Like, if you look at Scandinavian countries, they're very big on hockey. Right. But then again, if we talk about martial arts, the judo is number one, undoubtedly, everywhere.
If you look on the internet, the kind of assumption that that people say that the reason judo is second most practiced is because of China, because of Asian countries. Anything China likes, that's going to leave a mark. That's going to be a big...
You know, I was always, very skeptical about the China thing, because, to be honest with you, let's face it, the Chinese woman, they doing really well.
Yeah.
Talking about the Chinese man, they suck pretty bad. I hate to say it, but they do suck. I'm sorry. I'm working on my English. So that's why I'm not sure if they like judo that much, because I would assume, since the Chinese, they can do very good in everything they do. I think if they would really have judo that big and popular, then they will succeed. However, I'm not sure if you heard about this. It's a very interesting fact that Yamashita, I'm sure you know who's that.
Of course I know. But just in case people don't know, he's one of the greatest judo players of all time. He also is one of the most respected living judo players, right?
And yes.
He's a really big dude, well known for his Asoto Gari.
Yes, and Uchimata. Asoto Gari, Uchigari, Uchimata. So he was a coach for Chinese national team for several years recently.
Wait. He's Japanese, right?
Yes, he's Japanese, but right. He was hired by China, because I'm not sure if you know what China is doing. They're actually very, very smart, you know. My dad is visiting China for business trips every month, and my cousin goes to China on a regular basis for business trips again, and it's amazing. They, like, I'm looking at the pictures. Like, my cousin made a picture. He showed, like, a hotel, so he would stay in the same room, so the company he visiting will rent the same room for him several times, and... he said, like, so he will come in September, and he would look at the window, and it will be nothing. He will come back in October, it will be, like, 5 new high scrapers if you look from the same window. So they develop in very, very quick. And I know with soccer, like again, getting back to soccer, they used to have some very famous European coaches for national team. And then so they're doing the same thing with other sports. If they're not very good at those sports, they hire in best available specialists in the world. And what they did with judo, they brought Yamashita. And I actually know that Putin was making some jokes about this. He said something like that it's like that we should not allow Yamashita to go to them. It will give them too much advantage. They're all already like doing too well in everything.
Yeah, they got the numbers. Yeah, I mean, America does the same. I don't know if America's done that with judo yet, but they do it with wrestling.
Have you saw that famous, not famous, but it's a kind of big number of views relatively on YouTube? There is a video of some guy, I think he's actually from New York area. He's talking about why Russia dominates wrestling, why like Eastern Europe we like 50-70% of medals in major competition.
I haven't seen it. What's his logic?
He's saying that there was like that he was actually a wrestler. So he was originally a wrestler and he wrestled in college, like in high school, in college. And he was pretty decent, I would assume, based on his. And then he became like a BJJ practitioner. And he said that BJJ experience actually allow to look at the wrestling from another perspective. And he said that BJJ allowed him to understand what's the difference between why like Eastern Europe wrestling is best in the world, let's put it straight. Not always, but for the most of the part.
Yeah.
And he said that because the wrestling in Eastern Europe used the same principle as a BJJ. So it's very technical. It's not based on power. Because he has said here in America, for most of the part, college wrestling, so it's very power-oriented. Those dudes, they're very conditioned. They're very, I mean, they always very like, he was saying that it's not necessary they don't have techniques. Sure, they do. They elite wrestlers, right? The difference, like the difference between the guy who got the last place in Olympic Games and the difference between the guy who got the first place, not that big, right? It is difference, but it's still the level is like because of the qualification system. So there's like no random people in the Olympic Games, right? But the measure of his point, he said that like Buivasar Saitiev, for example,
right.
He's very loose. So he said the general system of wrestling in Eastern Europe, it's very like BJJ. It's not relying on power because he said when you rely on power, first your body worn out really quickly. And he said sometimes the power will beat the technique. It happens, but for the most of the part, he said those like Eastern European like wrestlers, they're much more oriented on some like soft approach. You know, they like really like bunch of drilling, bunch of technique, like feel. Now, I mean, you kind of have to listen to this because, but it's pretty much the basic idea what he was saying.
It's good logic, but then again, you have, you know, I just realized this. I was talking to a wrestling friend of mine and we were talking about Dan Gable, and he's really the person that defined American wrestling for like several decades, really. Thinking back, he didn't have a technique. You know, a lot of these wrestlers like John Smith, a lot of the Russians, they have specific techniques they're known for. Dan Gable didn't have anything. He was just known for pinning dudes, just going crazy and pinning dudes. So it's I think that set the mindset for American wrestling.
Yeah, but like he said that was his point, and I think this is example like we can see in judo today. Like we have a
gripping.
We have a Teddy Riner who is he has very nice technique for big guy. He probably one of the most technical heavyweight, but he is very far from the most technical guys like Keiji Suzuki, Japanese. Those dudes, they like way for like Teddy Riner is pretty much white belt compared with them technique wise.
Yeah, well,
I mean it's relatively right, but
for people that don't know, Teddy Riner is a 7 foot tall black guy in the heavyweight division, probably going to be one of the greatest judo players of all time in terms of accomplishment. He's
already is.
Yeah, 6 or 7 time
world champion.
World champion, Olympic gold medalist.
Olympic silver medal. No, Olympic bronze medalist. And when he was 18, he was in the Beijing Olympic Games and he lost by Shido. He only had two losses for his career as soon as he started becoming in seniors, right? Like, and he started competing in seniors in 2007 in Rio. In Rio, he had final with Tatumenov. And it's probably his most competitive match.
Yeah, that was a good match.
In my opinion, right. It was a match. Tatumenov did kind of like silly mistake, but I mean, it happens. So then after that, next year in Beijing, Teddy Riner lost to Uzbekistan dude, I believe, on by Shido, and then he got bronze medal. And then his only another loss was in Tokyo in 2011 when he lost by Shido in open weight class. So he won plus 100, but he was competing in two weight classes. In open division, he lost by Shido to Japanese dude, and many believe it was not fair, but he pretty much unique. But again, I personally believe that he is probably the strongest dude in any sport, not just judo.
Strongest as in physical strength, you mean?
Yes, like, yes. Like, yeah. And his power is very, like, you know, there's a bunch of guys like Brock Lesnar who's strong, but also you can obviously see that he's a bodybuilding type guy, you know? So he's not very, he's not exactly functional strength, like, all the way, right? Teddy Riner is his natural-born athlete. He's like a fucking Greek god.
Well, it's hard to... Well, see, you can't even tell... The way you can tell he's a powerhouse is by the way he manhandles people. You know, like, you watch his matches, and he just has... You know, he's going against some big dudes, and he's just manhandling them. He's just controlling them completely, treating them like little babies. It's very strange to watch. I mean, I'm sure a lot of that is technique, but a lot of that is sheer power.
Yes. That's why I'm not a big fan of his judo, even though I give him credit, because a bunch of big guys, they very slow. He's pretty quick, but that's what I'm trying to say. He's unique because for his size, he's like 7 foot, I don't know, like 280, 300 pounds, right? Yeah. He has speed of like 90 kilo guy. And I think this is like something you're born with. And I don't know anyone else in any other sport. Maybe Karelin was kind of close to him, but that's pretty much it.
Well, speaking of which, there's a video of Teddy Riner going against somebody I want to talk to you about, Ilya Siliadis, on YouTube. I don't know if you saw that video.
Yes, I did.
They're training together. So first, let me introduce Ilya Siliadis is a... Georgian born, but he's lived and competed in Greece for most of all of his career, really.
Not really. I mean, you're right, but the thing about Ilya Siliadis, I think he was not qualified for the first spot in Georgia at that time. I know it sounds weird, but and I think his family situation, I'm not 100% positive on his family situation, but I know that he was most hardest working guy in a gym, and he still is. He's training like crazy.
He's actually turning 27 next Sunday. It's funny. And he's 26 years old right now, but he has accomplished more than, you know, most.
Yeah, he's been in 3 Olympic Games already. It's crazy.
3 Olympic Games. It's great. And he won his first Olympic Games in 2004. He was Olympic champion at the category of 81 kilos. And then he won a bronze medal just recently in London. And he's a 2-time world champ, 5-time world medalist. Somehow that doesn't seem to capture the greatness of the man. He's probably one of the most well-known judo players, right? Why do you think he's considered to be one of the greats?
I think it's a combination of many factors. First, I mean, he has amazing, he has charisma, you know? He's very charismatic person.
I must win.
Yes. He's extremely nice guy. You know, like, he's probably like essence of strong guy. Because, you know, like, when someone is really strong, like really strong, like true 100% true pure power, the person is confident and they have unique character to this, and they don't need to prove it to anyone. You know, like whenever you see someone who's kind of like a like aggressive in any way without reason, you almost for sure can say that this person is
afraid,
has some problem with confidence, right? You know, that's why when I see some fighters in any sport, judo, MMA, whatever, when they like, oh, that guy sucks, I would never do this, I would do that, and so on. For me, just like, because for me, all like really strong people, they don't do this. I mean, and I think Iliadis, one, he's nice. Second, he has that like great personality. He's like natural born star. Third, he's very exciting judo. His judo is very like attacking, big throws. Really big throws.
Big pickups, right? He was, I mean, people love to see pickups.
I mean, he was good. One of the famous throws, which you can see in many highlights, is a standing kataguruma done by Iliadis in 2007 Worlds. It was a huge throw. It's probably one of the few, like, very clean. It almost looked like a kata. No, he picked up that Ukrainian guy, who's, by the way, 3 times European champion. He pick up the dude and just fucking kill him dead. His judo is very exciting. But what's interesting, if he would do just those pickups, he wouldn't be that famous. But he has very nice seonagi, what you call koga style. Yeah. And he has another very signature technique, which is kind of like mix of taiotoshi and seonagi, whatever you call it. Like I heard somebody call it airy seonagi. I'm not sure. He has amazing hip throw, uchimata. Just very, like, everything.
Something we don't get much in the United States, but he's just one of the greatest judo players of all time. Iliadis is coming to the United States.
He's the face of judo. He's face of judo. I think another thing what makes him that famous, first, he has another unique, like, characteristic beside of his age. So when he started competing, he was competing in 73 kilo on senior level. And if you look at that, again, to get back to his biography, he moved to Greece, I believe, when he was 16. So he lived in Georgia, and he had to travel to judo club from another part of the city. It's like, I don't know, it's like, try imagine if you live on the east of New York and you have to go all the way to the west, like spend hour in the traffic, so on. And I think he didn't really have much future, like from point of judo career, and one of the coaches, Nikos Ilias, I don't know his real Georgian name, he moved to Greece. I think he moved to Greece before he became his like legal father, you know? Like,
yeah, he adopted him, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I just wasn't sure how you call it. So, and he started competing for Greece, and I believe his first famous match, it's on YouTube, he went against Kanamaro. One of the greatest Japanese 73 kilo player in that time, very, very dominant player, amazing technician. One of the first guys who was doing standing Morota, like Seonagi. And he went against him, I believe, maybe in the world semifinal or something. And Iliadis had him with Vasari, and everyone thought that he would win, but Kanamaro catch him in last second. But then the next year he was competing in 81 in the European and Olympic Games. And then after Olympic Games in 2005, he started competing in 90 kilos.
90 kilos, yeah.
And then in, I believe, in 2008 or 9, he was competing in 100 plus, because at that time the qualification system allows, it was not belongs to a particular name. So if someone from Greece would get enough points in 100 kilos, then the Greece can send... Yes, then the Greece can send anyone. So Iliadis deserves 2 Olympic spots for his country. So he's pretty much amazing because he had major medals in 4 weight classes. Like 73, 81, 90, and 100. And this is unbelievable. And talking about the video you mentioned, he's the only one who was able to throw Teddy Riner, at least like that. I never see anyone who could throw Teddy Riner.
Yeah, they were going at it, and it was funny, man, there's so much fighting spirit in Iliadis. I mean, he was pissed off that he couldn't get stuff at first, you know? It's awesome.
Right.
So, yeah, like I was saying, he's going on a tour of the United States, actually starting this weekend, right? He's going to Tech Judo, is my back of the woods in Jersey, then visiting Morris and Pedro's place.
It's a really amazing opportunity. I'm kind of surprised there is not much media I think it's a really unique and great situation because I'm not sure if you know, I'm sure you do. It's probably like, I think 6-7 months ago, I know like three Olympics champions, they was in Pedros, you know, like from Russia. Mm-hmm. I believe it was Isaev and something, but still, even those guys, they're not comparable with Eliadis. Like you said, Eliadis is face of judo. And despite, doesn't matter how much more medals Rainer will have, Eliadis will be, he's the greatest judo player on the planet.
Yeah, for sure. So if you live in the East Coast this weekend or next week, you should make it out. I mean, I remember Biladid, the European champ.
Yes, Gennady Biladid.
Gennady Biladid, yeah. I mean, he's even a step lower than the Russian, the Olympic champs. But he's still an amazing, I mean, he's a European champ and is an amazing judo player, and he did a clinic. The attendance was very light. It was so sad, you know, in a certain sense. Yeah.
We're dealing with this thing because I'm not sure if you know, but Eliadis will be in Kansas, right?
Yeah. How the hell did you make that happen? No. So, okay, let me explain to people that are maybe listening. Is Eliadis is going to 6 places in the United States. Most of them are in the New York City area. But there's one place way the fuck out in the middle of the country that he's, I'm guessing, flying out to. It's Kansas City, where you're at.
Right.
So, yeah, that's kind of amazing. On November, Sunday, November 17th.
You won't believe how many emails I got from Texas, San Jose, LA, like all these places were like there. There was even not, they were, all of them was asking, whoa, how did you do it? Another guy just even sent me email. He said, I don't know what the deal is, but your club is very lucky to have you. Because, you know, like, to be honest, it's not much judo in Midwest. I mean, at least in Kansas City. There is a really nice BJJ clubs. There is a KCBJJ. They're doing really well. Amazing people. They have amazing coach, black belt, Jason Bercher. He's a great guy. Really light, amazing technician. And he has, like, real man, you know, he's modest, he's like,
right,
yes, he's like the type of man I really like. Regard, then we have a Dragon Family BJJ club, those another amazing guys. They pretty young, they train under Dustin Dennis Clean, whatever the guy name is, BJJ world champion. So they train under that dude. Those guys are doing really well and they competing in a decent competition. Then in judo, it's kind of unique situation. Kansas City is a capital of AAU judo, which is like, you know, it's a separate organization from IJF and those.
Oh, that's from Kansas City. Wow.
Right. Those guys, like the guy who runs AAU judo, he's in Kansas City. And
have you ever talked to that guy?
No, I used to train with him. That I mean, it's several of them. They really, I mean, we kind of not get along really well. All the concept is like IJF pussies, the judo sucked.
I like the general idea. I mean, I had the same thing with the catch wrestling. There's a few catch wrestling organizations, and they kind of talk shit about IBJJF, so the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu equivalent of IJF. And they say, you know, we want to do real rules, you know, when everything's allowed, you know, the way it should be, the way it used to be. So this kind of attitude is out there. And people, you know, there's always going to be people who really don't like the man, don't like the main organization. But it's nice to have that, you know. It's nice to have a little pushback.
I mean, they're nice guys. Right. It's interesting. They just don't really know what is like. Big judo is, you know, like that big judo, which is very popular in the world, they know this. And whenever you try show them even like basic highlights from IJF, which is like which looks totally different from what they do, they like look at this like it's something I know, they probably think it's made up video or whatever.
yeah they live in a very small world, but what you need to do is you need to get them to the Eliadis clinic and have
Eliadis. It's interesting because, you know, when I brought Zantara in Kansas City a year ago, one of the main guy from that club, and I know in person, one of my buddies talked with him and say, hey, Zantara is coming, like, are you going? And he said, no, I'm not interested, like, it's like nothing to learn for me. I mean, it's okay with me if you don't want to be like part of the game, right? It's okay, but I really feel bad for people who getting misled by people like that, because, you know, like, again, in places like Kansas, in New York, it's hard to do this. Because in New York, if you try to play something like this with judo, you will get caught really quickly. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, you will have, when you will have some guys from Jason Morris, from, I know, some guys from France, whatever. Yeah. If you have like guys like Travis Stevens coming in the club, you can't really play your sloppy joke judo, right? Mm-hmm. Because you will be... And here, people, they really don't know what is that, like, big judo is. Like, they really don't know what, like, world-level players are, what they can do, right? So they're getting confused and they're misleading, and it's sad. I mean, it's really sad.
But at the same time, let me push back on that a little bit. I actually kind of like this kind of little world where you don't know that there's an Iliadis out there, where you think your instructor is the greatest to have ever done judo or to have ever done jiu-jitsu. So that little world, it's fun to live in that world, you know, to be that sort of a big fish in a small fish tank.
Yeah. I'm sure it gives you a lot of that, like, you know, you can feel yourself. You can put yourself really high.
Yes.
And sometimes I'm actually jealous of them because in my world I live, I know that I am on the bottom, you know.
Yeah,
I'm on the bottom.
It sucks realizing how far on the bottom you are. Like, I mean, Bill Adid was the first time I realized that my judo wasn't just bad. It was just wrong. My judo was wrong is probably the best word. It's like I wasn't even on the right road. You know,
it's interesting what you mentioned because, you know, you friends with him on Facebook. I think you got hooked up with him through me, my good friend Jesse Hernandez. He's a very decent BJJ player. He's a brown belt in BJJ. He was training with Dustin Devens for many years. He's very good. I mean, he's like really decent in BJJ. So, and he was doing judo with that club for many years. And, you know, when I started playing, his judo was like you said, it just was wrong. It was not really judo. He's a strong guy. He has amazing ground, but standing, it's just pure power.
Yep.
And pretty much maybe Sumi Gaeshi, some, you know, yes. So then we had some guy, we had Alisher Mantabertov, who was bronze medalist in Asian Games, and he actually competed in the United States in major tournaments, and he was doing really well. He beat Brad Bolin like 3 times, I believe. He was a bronze medal in New York Open, and New York Open, quite unique competition, because despite being built up, like B level, it has many high level players, you know.
Yeah, right, because it's New York City. Yeah, people come to visit.
Yes, people love to travel. Yes, people love to go to New York, and it has many Olympic champions, many high level players. So Ali, I believe he lost only to Mongolian Asian champion. So the guy who was Asian champion, and then he got bronze medal in the repechage. And I believe he got silver or bronze medal in U.S. Open. So that he came here to Kansas and he lived here for a year or so. And he came to BJJ club where Jesse was practicing. And the guys asked, and Jesse eventually, he's a black belt in judo that time, even though his judo was kind of like very, very, like, whatever you call it.
There's got to be a word for that, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, right. He's probably was black belt for that world, but for a big thing, it's such a, like, exact, it's probably, it just was not really judo. So, and Ali made a comment to BJJ guys here when they asked him, what do you think about Jesse? He said, Jesse's judo sucks. And, you know, it was very interesting because those guys, they get very offended. They love Jesse. He's very good in BJJ. They're very good friends with him. And, you know, then after that, I started hanging out with Jesse. We became friends. And we talked about this. And I actually have to give huge credit to Jesse. It took a lot of balls and being man to admit it to yourself. What I was doing
absolutely
before, it's not real thing, you know?
Especially as a black belt. Yeah, that is... So he did what most people fail to do, really, because you can just close your eyes and close your ears and just live in a little world where you're the man, or you can honestly face up to the fact that, you know, I could get a lot better.
Yes,
a
exactly.
lot better.
And it's not an interesting thing. It's not about being Olympic champion. It's not about staying on the same level with Olympic champion, right? But at least do the right thing, you know?
Yeah,
like
get on the right road.
Yes, yeah. Like we talk about this last time. What's the difference between the BJJ world champion and some decent like purple belt? The technique is the same. It's just the amount of maybe agility, like combinations, fighting practice. But technique is the same. Technique is the right or it's wrong. There is no like your way, my way. I mean, there is always some kind of modifications, but the core is always will be the same, you know? The core is like, it's like rules in for some particular techniques.
Yes, absolutely.
So, and Jesse, he had enough balls to admit it and put on a, you know, on a right road. And I think that he was pretty lucky because he is a friend with a very decent judo player in Kansas, Randy Jones, one of our partners. That guy was very good back in the year, back in the days. I mean, he's still a decent guy. I mean, and he's an amazing player. He's an amazing player, amazing person. And he was competing with Jimmy Pedro when he was young and so on and so on. So Jesse was kind of start working on this. And he, like you said, he admitted that what he was doing, it was wrong. But many people, they choose not to. And I totally understand why, because otherwise you have to feel like I do. I know that I'm so far from Mansoor Esaev or Georgi Zantaraya.
Yeah.
I'm far like New York from China.
Yeah, and you're getting old and yeah.
But at least I get comfort from feeling that I believe my technique is correct, you know. I believe my technique is pretty decent. I don't have that speed. I don't have that, it like, I wouldn't do it in a real match like they do. But, I mean, I hope I'm doing the same.
You're on the right path. That's good.
Yes.
One of the questions I have is, so I'm really trying to avoid talking shit about American judo. Like about myself. Really.
And we can't. Yeah, I mean, we shouldn't do it. No, we shouldn't do it simply because American judo is not shit. It's not shit. I mean, American judo has specific problems. And, you know, it's like, I like to think about this way. Like, in Africa, there is no strong hockey team, right? Well, should we say that African people sucks in hockey?
Well, I don't think you want to give that example because let's not compare American judo and African hockey.
Yeah. Okay.
Because
yes,
American judo is pretty good, is better than African hockey.
Yes. Yes. But what I'm trying to say, there is some objective reasons. And I actually heard the story. One of my buddies in Kansas, very good friend, was Nick Del Popolo, and I know you talked with Nick recently. And there is a story when Nick Del Popolo was given right. I think that story came from his girlfriend. I'm not sure if I should share it, but I'll do it. So what's going on? His girlfriend is giving right to one of Russian judo guys who came to Miami Grand Prix, right?
Yes.
And the guy is asking her, why the car you're driving sucks so bad? Because those guys, they drive in Mercedes, they're making good money. Example is, there is a whole system in strong judo countries.
Yes.
The whole system. America doesn't have this system. All these medals, which Kyle Harrison, I actually have a theory why American girls are good. And my theory is very kind of feministic based. So pretty much America is best country from point of woman rights, right?
Yes.
Woman has the same right as a man. So pretty much what's going on, like Kyle Harrison, when she practiced at national team, she will practice with men. She will practice with Travis Stevens, with all other guys. She will randori with them. She has that advantage. Like girls in Russia, even though they have a great facility and all the stuff, but they don't fight with men. Same like my friend recently was in San Jose and he saw Marty Malloy practicing, you know, and he said the whole club was working pretty much for Marty. And it's in Russia, girls, they don't have this advantage. However, talking about men, when we have this like medals by Travis Stevens or when Nick Del Popolo is winning something, you will always have to multiply these medals like several times. If Travis Stevens will win next Olympic Games bronze medal, that bronze medal will have much more value than any gold by a Russian player.
Right.
Because that gold, that bronze medal will be despised of all.
Right.
All this, because, yes, it's pretty much first, like again using that Halishar from Kyrgyzstan.
Yeah.
His professional effort. His professional effort, and it's really hard to to be professional athlete in America.
Professional judo player, you mean? Yeah.
No, not just judo player, but I'll give you example. Like my son, I have two boys, and my oldest son is doing judo in a city which is roughly like slightly over 1 million. So it's a main club for that city, right?
Yeah.
So that club, my son practice 6 times a week. His training session is 2 hours for 45 minutes, which include 30 minutes stretching, like 45 minutes like physical, like pull-ups, push-ups, ropes, and then technical drill, right?
Mm-hmm.
The coaches, they don't really care about being nice with you, being politically correct.
Right.
If you don't walk your ass off, the coaches, they're not going to try entertain you to keep you in the club because they have to pay the bills, right? The coach is getting salary from sport department, and the sport department like evaluate the job based on how many champions they do, right?
Wait. What are you describing right now? What country?
I am describing right now is Russia. Like I said, my son, my oldest son, he's 11 years old. He's trained in a province city. But I'm trying to give example and compare it with America. So
okay, good.
So that system, which a bunch of strong judo country has, the system is not existing in America. So American players, they do it pretty much as a hobby. If most of, like, all American national team players, maybe except Travis Stevens, they have a job. They have to have some job to pay their bills.
Yeah.
Because they cannot really train, like, full-time. First, because they need to have facility, they need to have money to live, so on. It's not just about, it's not even about making money, it's simply about surviving. And I heard that it's only Travis Stevens and Kyle Harrison, the only two persons in American judo who is getting some kind of base pay from U.S. judo. But even though I heard there was some post on Facebook where people was talking that they struggled to get this money.
Yeah, and I'm sure that money is not very. It's not a very large amount. I'm sure.
Yes. So that's why for me. Like when we talking about that American judo has some problems, I think actually in the conditions American judo is, American judo doing amazing. It should do much worse than it's doing now.
Yes, and so I talked to Nick Del Popolo. I had an interview, and if people want to listen to it, it's episode 11. He mentioned something what you just mentioned, which is you basically. So he said that the Jimmy Pedros Club is basically centered around Kayla Harrison, and the Marty Malloy's Club in San Jose is centered around her. He said that to succeed in as an American judoka, you have to have basically a club that's all about you.
Right.
That's why he moved down to it's an interesting decision. I don't quite understand the details of it, but he moved.
No, I think it's a great decision. I think he should have moved a long time ago.
So in case people don't know, sorry to interrupt, is he moved down to Miami and he's sort of creating his own training regimen. He's building his own camp. He invites people from all over the world, all over the United States, but all over the world to come train with him, like one individual person specifically, you know, at a time and sort of really structuring his own program.
Yeah, so he's pretty much what he's doing. He's emulating the training regimen what people naturally have in Germany, France, Russia, Japan, like just simply by itself, you know, like people over there, they don't think about this. And here again, it's extremely hard. Like Nick Del Popolo is an amazing judo player. His technique is amazing. I mean, his judo is lovely to watch. I think he has big trouble with dealing with lefties. It's just my opinion.
Yeah. He was complaining about it. It was funny. I mean, so maybe you can explain this to me. He mentioned something. I don't know if it was just an exaggeration or offhand. He said that it's like 90% of judo players at the elite level, like in the top 50, are lefties. Is that right?
Yeah, I wouldn't say 90, but probably 65 at least.
So it's a majority, wow.
Yes, and I think it's very... What's happening, if you think about this, if you're righty, your right hand is stronger than your left hand, and this is when if you try play judo lefty, then your right arm became the pulling arm, right?
Right.
So you technically can pull stronger.
Oh, interesting.
But I mean...
Is that your theory? Is that the Nico Dax theory that you're proposing?
No. I heard this from someone else, but I mean, I think it just... I don't know, it's maybe lefties on the... Like, because I actually believe that most of the people who play lefty, they're actual, like, lefties in their life, you know? It's not like the righty, like, natural righty play lefty. And that's, by the way, one of the things, like, in my judo club, when I work with kids, I always will always have to deal with this righty-lefty. I always, like, work on the stance that if you're righty, you need to... like have your right feet in front, your right shoulder in front, and the whole, because that's, by the way, why the judo is so different compared with 20 years ago, like 30 years ago, because nobody played that square type of judo, right? Everybody stays side. And Nick Del Popolo, I believe, has probably just because he doesn't have strong randori partners who is lefty, he has big trouble dealing with lefties. And by the way, I think that's why Ali, whom we mentioned before, yes, he fought with Nick Del Popolo in Moscow Grand Slam, and he beat him, I think, with a pawn. And he said that he thinks that Nick Del Popolo is an amazing player, very strong, but he's kind of weak on the left side. Wow. And Ali is very strong lefty, so...
That's what Nick said as well. So going back to Iliadis real quick is... so we talked about American Judo a little bit, and he's doing a tour of the United States... So that's the challenge he's going to have, right, is this, you know, amazing judo player. Like, what? How do you think he'll do the seminars? Like, it's probably going to be majority are beginners, right? So
I think, actually, I believe that his seminars will be, it sounds weird, but I believe his seminars will be oriented like no-gi.
Maybe, oh, interesting.
So I think he's going to target BJJ. Like,
awesome. Very interesting.
Audience, yes, because I think he, like...
So he understands that America is jiu-jitsu, right?
yes. They totally understand. Tilly Celiadis has very interesting manager. He's a pretty young guy. He's very nice, like, well-educated, like, very interesting person. And I think he studied America really well, and I believe he did some research to find out. So I think they looking at America as a, like, totally unlike new country, like for like the whole new like adventure, like
right. Like full of opportunities.
Yes, yeah, like bunch of opportunities, and they totally understand that the actual classic judo, like. Classic judo, if you think about this, like, classic judo, like, so, like you said, it's only a few places where they go, so they pretty much, they're going to do everything in the East Coast, where they're going to do in the Pedro, where, like, half of the national team, right? They're going to do in Tech Judo, I believe, in...
Morris's place, Jason Morris Center?
Then
Westchester Club?
Yes.
And the New York Athletic Club, of course.
Yes.
And then also, let's not forget the capital of judo, Kansas City.
right. And, man, again, I get so many emails about that. People was asking me how you did this, babe. Because, you know, like, even on the Facebook, the Coins Brothers was like, hey, brother, come to Chicago. So they couldn't believe why he's not. It's, by the way, we're dealing with some interesting issue, I think, again. It's because the American Judo is so much dependent on it. It's struggling financially so bad. And, you know, the money challenge in the life is always the biggest challenge. You know, I actually had a very nice friend in Russia whose kind of was... He was a very interesting guy. He was a prisoner. He spent like 40 or 50 years in prison because of political charges. And so he and all he was doing those he was reading books. He was like freaking encyclopedia, you know, and he was extremely interesting person to talk about, and because he witnessed the so many horrible, amazing things, and it just unbelievable. And what he said, that very strong man, very like charismatic, famous people in Gulag, and he said those people would pass many different challenges, you know, like somebody will torture them, somebody will put them, like throw them in a single unit without food for 5 days, only with like water, and they will still keep their honor and pride and saying, man, but, and he said that the hardest challenge in the life which turns people to become nasty person is money. He said so many man who was strong in many like very difficult situation and keep their pride and honor, but when they was getting big money, they would like break, you know.
Yeah.
Money breaks
yeah. most people, yeah.
And I think that's what's going on with judo, when judo is struggling so much with financial support, that's why the egos and politics come in play. And like we were trying to, like we don't really get much support from cities around us. So we only one place in the middle of the country which is doing Eliades. So we giving great opportunity for many people who live like in a 15 hours range, so you can just jump in your car and drive to Kansas or even fly. It will be much cheaper than you go to New York, right?
Right.
It will be much cheaper, right? And at the same time, I noticed like many clubs don't really help us to promote. They don't really promote to the students, and it seems for me just because they, you know, they kind of, okay, we're not getting that. Anything
yeah, and it's, you know, the amazing thing, I mean, for people that do jiu-jitsu that are listening, you're charging $50, I think, right?
Yeah, which is so little.
It's ridiculous. I mean, I think I had to pay $150 for Salo Ribeiro seminar. You know, I would kind of compare, you know, they're similar levels. I would say Eliades is even greater in their respective sports. But it's just amazing. $50 is like, that's when like
I would say that Eliades is comparable with Ricks and Gracie. If you put Hicks, like,
yes,
I would say
yeah.
Eliades.
Well, like he is the difference between him and Hickson is Eliades is still 26 years old, right?
Right.
So give him he still doesn't have that like old man wisdom. Legend type thing going on, right? He's still like a young guy, smiling and still hunting for gold, right? He's gonna do 2016, right?
Yes, and then he actually has a great chance to win because I think he really adopted to the rules. So, but again, you're totally right. I think actually Travis Stevens was talking about this. I don't remember if I read it online, but he was talking that BJJ guys, they used to, I think it was advertisement of the gi, some kind of new gi from Pedro or something, yeah, for BJJ, which is like very expensive, and they were talking like that BJJ guys, this used to spend money on the DVDs, on seminars, on traveling, and I think overall BJJ is much more healthy than judo community in America. I think
yeah,
BJJ
sure.
is I think BJJ is very good about maintaining strong quality, even though there is not many bullshit black belts around the U.S. in the BJJ. And I think, again, it's very easy to explain why, because there is many strong IBJJF competition around U.S. So if you're some bullshit black belt player, then there is a bunch of decent like purple belts around, and if you go against them, you will get squashed and you will be embarrassed, right?
Yeah.
In judo, it's a bunch of areas where not many strong judo black belts, right?
Right.
And this will allow some joke people to do what they do.
The internet is really probably behind the fact that you can't get away with having a fake black belt these days. That people are going to, you know, people are going to write reviews online and things like that. But I have to ask you a sensitive question then.
Okay.
So a lot of, it's sensitive because people don't like talking about belts. But a lot of people ask me. So I try to explain to people that there's a difference between a judo black belt and a jiu-jitsu black belt in terms of like the way both sports look at it and the time it takes to earn one, right? Mm-hmm. I usually try to say, and you tell me if you agree or not, I try to say that a judo black belt is kind of like a jiu-jitsu purple belt in terms of the amount of time it takes to earn one. Is that something...
It's a yes and no. Yes for America, no for in other countries.
Is it easier or harder in other countries?
Like, I'll tell you this. In Russia, there is, since I'm from Russia, I will use examples from Russia. I know in Japan, it's actually funny, Japan one of the strongest judo country, but they have some kind of relatively low standards for black belts, you know? I know a bunch of young kids from Japan who are wearing black belts and they're not really well. They like not very strong, but again, I think it's they kind of give the black belt with a credit, you know? So, but it's still, those kids, they were doing judo for like 5-7 years in a strong club, so they still maintain pretty high quality. In strong judo countries, again, in Russia, they have a sport ranking system, which is the same for any sport. So it's third degree, second degree, first degree levels, like sport guy for kids. Then it goes third degree, second degree, first degree sport level for adults. And then it goes candidate to master of sport. Right. And then the next one is master of sport. So the candidate of master of sport, it's a state champion. So you have to win gold in a state, right? And because of strong qualification system, it's pretty much you the same level like top national 5 players, right? So in a candidate to master of sport, it's actually like a blue brown belt in judo. So the black belt in judo, it's a master of sport or international master of sport. So it's a top. It's only like professional people who play judo for many years, who do it like pretty much for living, right? Those people wearing black belts in Russia.
That's way different than U.S. then.
It's the same like in U.S., like a black belt for PGJ.
Yes, okay,
it's only
gotcha.
People who do it for like, but like again, in Kansas, like I'll give you an example. In Kansas, probably at least 100 judo black belts. Easy.
Yes.
Easily. 100 judo black belts. And I think it's a... 3 or 4 BJJ black belts. One of them is Brazilian dude. I think he's actually world champion, something like Picana. Something like this. I'm not sure if you know him, like big guy.
Mm-hmm.
Picana, something. Like, I could be wrong and not very familiar. Then this guy is Jason Burchard, who's a black belt under Renato Torres. And I think it's someone another one. But it's pretty much, that's it. And all of those guys whom I mentioned, they do BJJ for a living. You know, they...
Yeah.
It would be JPRA professionally. Judo, it's actually the same. It's just the issue of that recreational style clubs who greatly depends on the use, like income. You know, you have to entertain your student. You need to promote. So on like that club, which I mentioned to you, which deals with AU, right?
Mm-hmm.
Those clubs, they have like an unbelievable amount of black belts, and people getting black belts in 3 years or something. And it's highly dependent that you buy books from the coach, all this.
Yeah.
You know, you go to some clinics done by the same coach and so on, so on. So, I mean, unfortunately, just the matter of you kind of right. And unfortunately, I would say that it's actually probably even blue belt, like judo black belt.
Well,
like
I wanted to be nice.
Yes, because again, like Nick Del Popla, I believe is what black belt he is. Like what degree?
But you think he's beyond first? So he's second?
I mean, he may be second at the most, but I think he's actually like legit ranking. Like again, like there's a bunch of guys in Kansas who's like fourth degree, fifth degree black belt, and then we have Tamerlan Tmianov, who's like one of the most decorated ever players with 2 Olympic medals and like 5 world titles or whatever, and then he's like third degree or second degree black belt in judo. I mean, so
yeah, belts are a funny thing, man. But
yeah.
I'm glad I cleared that up. I understand it better now.
Talking about belts, I'll give you a simple example how many those very simple like criteria. There is a basic set of the techniques, right? And judo techniques on the ground and basic set techniques of the standing, right? Like it's pretty much, let's say, all together is 70 of them, right?
So that's how you define basic. Interesting.
I mean, there is some like your signature on my like modifications or like some like weird techniques which are not in the Gokyo, right?
I thought you were going to say like 10. You know, you're talking about the Kano list, like that.
Yes, the Gokyo, whatever they call it, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, the Gokyo, and to be black belt, you need to be fluent and know how to do all those techniques. You know, I think I show you those private videos with Santaraya. You know, I was helping him to do private classes. You know,
beautiful and, stuff, man. Some beautiful technique from him.
Yes, and he was, if you listen, he was doing some comments, and what he was saying, like the guy asked him to show Kouchi, and he said, I'm not good at this throw. So, and then he would say, like, I'm asking, what do you mean? You don't know how to do it? And I smiled. He said, sure, I know how to do it. He said, I'm just like suck. And what he meant by suck, he doesn't do it in high-level competition. But at the same time, and he showed two of those techniques. It's a Morotasio Nanagi knee version and Kouchi foot sweep. So he never does those throws in randori, but when he did them, they high quality, you know. And that's what exactly. So if you take like legit judo black belt, that person's supposed to do all Gokyo techniques, like those basic techniques, perfectly, right? And then he may be not all of them using in randori, right? But, and again, it's like he has to maintain some kind of quality, grip fighting and all the stuff. And that's
Wait. So you think that's interesting, man. I mean, you do think that's important. So if I, you know, if I was somebody like Yamashita or something, well, bad example. But if I was elite level with a set of like 5, 6, 7 techniques, but I didn't know how to do a Yoko Tomonagi or I didn't know how to do Kouchi, actually those are all easy throws. Those are all terrible examples. So you think all the black belts, so a definite like a requirement to be a black belt is you should actually be able to throw Yoko Tomonagi, Uchimata.
Sure. And like trust me, all those guys on a high level, like all those black belts, they know all techniques. They're not necessarily have them as a signature techniques, you know. Like every player in judo has their set of the favorite signature techniques, and the same like in BJJ, it's not going to be 100 of them, right? It's usually like 3-5 throws he uses in competition, right? Like Travis Stevens, he used, I believe, like his main technique standing Eponzi Onagi.
Yeah.
Then he do some knee drops.
Like for example, Travis probably, I don't know, I might be very wrong, but I feel like he doesn't have an Osoto Gari.
No, I actually saw him do Osoto Gari in Bundesliga when he was competing for...
Interesting.
Abensberg. But, I mean, I'm pretty sure if you ask Travis to do, because I saw some videos of him drilling, he will do it.
Yeah, and okay. What I actually meant is your requirement for black belt for a more normal human being, somebody who's not competing in the Grand Prix. So, like, you think like a black belt and judo should be somebody who can teach and demonstrate the majority of the main techniques?
Yes, 100%, at least. I mean, can I ask a question? Do you think a person who doesn't know how to be triangle can be BJJ black belt, even though that, let's say that person has amazing basic like jujigitami armbar and he winning bunch of BJJ tournaments with that armbar, but can he wear a black belt? Can you imagine that person that doesn't know how to do triangle?
So doesn't know is a funny thing. Doesn't know,
right? Exactly.
For example, I'm a perfect example of that. I believe I will get to black belt in jiu-jitsu without ever submitting anybody with a triangle in competition. Like I don't like the triangle,
right? But I'm sure you know how to do it.
I would answer it the same way as Zantarai answered it, which is I don't know how to do it.
Okay, but I mean,
I can show it, but I won't. My heart won't be behind it, you know.
Yes.
The details.
But you can show. You know details. You know the right way.
Sure.
But it's the same. Like you know, it's the same. Like when I see some coaches teaching in judo the kind of signature modifications to beginners, it makes me laugh. For me, it's a crime. Because here's the thing. There is a classic set of techniques and the classic way of doing. Like, there are the classic techniques and judo classic techniques in BJJ, right?
Yes.
But since I'm not familiar that much with BJJ, let's use judo as an example.
Ippon Seinagi.
Right. So there is a several ways, right? You cannot teach the kids to do Ippon Seinagi like Travis Stevens way, right? You have to start with a classic one. Why? And even though they're most likely never gonna really use the classic version in competition, right? It's very important. Same with Uchimata. Before you start teaching and learn some kind of variations of like Eastern European style, whatever, you have to get that basic stuff under your belt, because the basic style, why it's a classic, because it's a time proof that it will work for anyone with any body type.
Yeah, but at the same time, something you mentioned last time, right, is you mentioned Hazinga. You know, the techniques that you will actually do in competition will often be very far away from the ones,
yes,
from the classic ones. So it's what you just said is it's time proven, but it may, you know, doing.
Yeah, but you know, I actually was thinking and working on this a lot. And what my thoughts about this right now, it's very interesting. I think you need to start learn from a classic version, right? You probably have to be mentally ready that this classic version not gonna work in competition. So you pretty much just work on this as a preparational step, right? What's happened, I'll give you an example. So most likely, your Uchimata, if you're gonna throw Uchimata in the real competition, it's gonna be one step, like jump in, entry, right?
Yes.
So, but think about this, how easy to drill it like this? Because the major aspects of Uchimata is the pull, your hand positioning, your feet, it's all the more, because it's very important to do some speed drilling, you know, like some drills which like amplify speed, light, like to be lightning fast and all this stuff. There is nothing works better than classic Japanese Uchikomi. Nothing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just a matter of understanding and building the system. And it's the same like Travis Stevens. I saw he was doing perfect classic Japanese Uchikomi for Uchimata. Mm-hmm. So Kyle Harrison was doing it. It was some few videos before Olympic Games, like before London Olympic Games. They were doing that classic drilling. Do you see them doing those moves in Randori in real competition? No, but this is the way to drill it. But at the same time, I believe you have to also drill it the way you do in Randori, but it's technical, like details. I'm not sure if they're interesting for people. But.
Yeah, so you mentioned Travis Stevens, and you know, I had a conversation with him. If people want to listen to it, it's episode 13. One of the things he said to me, now he's very different than a lot of people I talk to, in that, like, I asked him, I'm interested in like fear, doubt, exhaustion,
right,
all these kind of things,
right,
in competition. And he seemed to have none of that. Like, he said, you know, I asked him if he was ever scared of anybody in competition. And he was saying that's a joke, that he never was.
I saw his.
Do you think that's part of being an elite level competitor? You're like,
I don't know. I mean, man, to be honest, his answer, I saw his stuff. I mean, again, I love Travis Stevens as a judo player, as an athlete. He seems also a great guy, and also, but to be honest, he strikes me kind of weird with his answers, you know.
That's not just his answers, man, right? That's his approach to everything.
Like, yes, yes.
To injury too. He trains through injury like a motherfucker.
I think it's like, you know, like I mentioned in the beginning, like Iliadis for me is the essence of the strong person who's, you know, he's such a confident, he's extremely nice. You know, he never will. He always say like good things about opponents or something. So you pretty much, I believe you have to give people some slack. Everyone is different. I believe the way he answered your question, I just think it's not what you was asking him. I think he was talking with you about the actual fear in a way, like, you know, if you step outside and you're scared of some like people who can shoot, right?
Yeah.
I think his reply was more like that way, you know? Like, I think what question is actually the sport fear. The sport fear when you know that someone is really good and you have that kind of, you know, you have that like emotions which come through you, right?
Yeah, like
it's the same. It's the same. Like try imagine if I would go against. I believe I'm. Even though I'm like I'm not brave guy, whatever you call it, right? I'm not because I had this like a funny conversation several times. Like people would ask me, like you know, like I would go with some heavy guys in Rondor, and people would say, "Hey man, you like you're so brave." I would say, "I'm not brave. It doesn't take brave. Doesn't take braveness from me, you know, because I'm Rondori 1,000 times in my life. I'm confident. I know what can happen." So it's experience which come to play, and you don't feel that. However, let's say if I would have to go against Hicks and Gracie, and his goal is to break my arm, you know, like I know that he's there to break my arm. Is it going to affect me? Is it going to strike some emotions in me? Yes, it will. Like I would be liar if I said that. No, fuck it. I don't care. I'm fine. You know, like it's the same. I mean, if I would run Dora with Ziliaris, and I know his goal is through me on my head, then it will make me nervous,
well,
right?
I mean, you're absolutely right. And at the highest level, all those guys go through fear. So that's that, and that's an absolute fact, certainty. But Travis's approach to this is deny that completely. I mean, that's almost an answer in itself. It's his mental approach to the game is to.
No, I think he just talking about different fear. The fear you're talking, the fear he's talking, I think it's a different. What he's talking like, if you're scared of the guy, don't step on the tatami, go home, like what, like whatever, whatever. For me, just. Like, again, I'm sure, like, when you go on a BJJ match, you don't have that fear, like, you know, like, you fear some person. Like, you know, you don't fear for your life. You don't fear for your
right.
life.
Well,
for your health.
What we're talking about is the fear. Can you imagine in your mind beating this person? So it's the fear of losing against somebody who's really fucking good.
Exactly. That's what we're talking. I think he doesn't have this. I don't believe it. Because when Travis Stevens, he beat, if you look at his statistic, when he go against like elite top players, right? And he lost 88%.
Yeah, but if you look at the way he lost, that's another interesting thing, man. He has not been thrown very much.
Oh, no. I disagree with you. I think you're looking at Olympic Games. Olympic Games is the worst judo competition. It's kind of not just the worst judo competition. It's the most famous judo competition, right? Especially for general public. General public, if you ask them about Olympic judo, that's what they make opinion of based on judo. And by the way, if I would only look Olympic judo, I would hate judo because Olympic judo sucks for me. If you look at last...
Is it very careful?
Yes, very careful. No throws, no stuff like that. I mean, it's like... And I totally understand why. If you train your ass for like 4 years and you put everything on a scale for that day, and especially a bunch of those guys from Europe, they making very big money for this medal, right? So they have so much on the scale, then you're gonna be very strategic. You're not gonna worry about beauty of the game. It's like, you know, it's a famous interview by Vitaly Makarov, a Russian judo legend, when he was saying that his judo result was suffering because he naturally wanna play beautiful judo and it will hurt his like medal success. And the same with Zantarai. If you look at Zantarai match in it's probably you should do it for our next conversation. Mm-hmm. I mean you should look his match in 2011 world final against Sabirov. The Zantarai was like not playing strategy game at all, and Sabirov was playing that tactics strategy game, and Zantarai just like got broken, right? So the point is that you look at Travis Stevens based on his matches like in Olympic Games, but it's not very good indicator. You look at most of his matches in Grand Prix and Grand Slam during the year, whenever he would go against really top players in the division, for the most time he would be struggle. It's not like he would lost on something on like, you know, by Shido or something.
Yeah.
He would struggle, you know.
Oh man, again you break my heart. Two podcasts in a row, but
no. I mean, again, I love Travis Stevens. I agree with you, but I watch many of his matches, many, and I talk with people who fought him, And he's very good player. He's very good player. He's actually very strategic, very like tactical player. And I'm sure he's not scared of anyone, like as a person, you know. But at the same time, if he would try telling me that he wouldn't be worried if he would go against like top players, I don't know. I don't believe this.
Here's the thing. That's what I'm trying to tell you. I really believe that he understood the question, and that. His answer, he like laughs at stuff a lot. His answer to things is to kind of block them out with aggression.
Yes, I really like the way you put it.
You know, I thought about what you said last time, which I asked you if you think that Travis Stevens can win a gold medal in 2016, and you kind of quickly said that that's a very unlikely possibility.
I can explain why. It will be kind of a very mathematic approach.
Well, let me before you explain why, let me say why I am skeptical about your answer, because I think of the two matches against Oleh Bischoff in the two Olympics. Oleh Bischoff is the 2008 gold medalist and 2012 silver medalist, and they tied each other, you know. It was an incredibly close match in both Olympics. So that's why I'm, you know, Travis could have won each of those fights. So that's why I have this kind of feeling like he could have had the gold.
I agree, but at the same time, let's put it a different way. Let's say Travis Stevens beat, let's say Travis Stevens, let me actually go even look right now on inside.com. What I'm trying to say that he has he already been in two Olympic Games, right?
Yes.
He ended up getting fifth place. Right now, he's highly concentrated on BJJ, right?
Yes.
Which eventually his judo gonna suffer.
Well, that's your theory, yeah.
Do you have any objective arguments that it's not the case?
That's something we'll have to talk about next time, but it's not a proven fact. I think I tend to agree with...
No, I think it's very scientific proven.
Yeah, this is the Nico School of Science, yes. But
it's not my school. I think it's official fact that to succeed in a high level judo, you need to fight best guys in the camps, you know, you need to be in that game all the time. When he is training so much time on the ground right now, right? So he's eventually spending. You have some limit in your, when you're a professional athlete, you have some limit for your body. Those guys already, when they train in judo, they already going beyond the limit, like, you know, drilling, randoring, all this stuff, right? Like those Japanese guys, they randoring for like 4 hours in a row every day, right? They do like technical drilling 2 hours in the morning and like 4 hours randoring in the night. Like those Russian guys, whatever. Travis Stevens was doing the same. Right now, he takes some time out of this to randoring on the ground, you know, to roll on the ground. If you're going to tell me that he can keep the same intensity standing while doing high-level BJJ train, I'm sorry, I would be skeptical.
I'm skeptical as well, but you also have to think of jiu-jitsu as a sport that's much less intense than judo, especially the way he approaches it. He's not so much concerned about the highest level of competition, and he's a much more relaxed judo player. He's a guard player, so you could jiu-jitsu player. So you can think of the jiu-jitsu that he does as almost like a break from judo. Is a time to relax.
Okay, I'm looking at the Beijing right now. So, in the Beijing, if he would win Oleh Bischoff, he would have to face whom? He would have to face Kim Jae-boom, one of the greatest.
I guess I would summarize your point, and I'll have to think about that. But I guess I would summarize your point to say that there's a big difference between being number five and number one in the world.
Like, right.
It's very difficult to beat the number one, number two, number three guy all in the same day.
Right.
Which is
exactly
something you might have to do.
Yeah. Yes, and this is what it's going to be. That's the reason why Travis Stevens haven't won Olympic Games and haven't won World Championship, right? You always try and tell me, like, he actually in last Olympic Games, he beat Avdagil Chikrishvili from Georgia, very talented dude. Right now he's coming on the top. He's not like top player, but he's close. He's like top five players. He has potential. He's a very young player. He has potential to grow. Travis Stevens had very long match with him to the golden score. So it's a huge accomplishment to beat the Georgians, because before Chikrishvili killed Travis Stevens, if you saw that video, it's a video on YouTube, he fought with him, I believe, in Tokyo or something. He's like Travis Stevens commit his famous Kogi style Seonagi, and the Georgian kid.
Oh, yeah. I actually put that video up. Yeah, it's like one of the biggest hits on my channel. Yeah, it's fucking huge counter, man. It's awesome.
He has huge counter. So Chikrishvili, and they actually fought like three or four times, and Chikrishvili beat him all this time. The only one time Chikrishvili lost to him in Olympic Games, and I believe it was he was like playing too careful, and as soon as he started playing that careful strategic games, this is where Stevens is best. He's so conditioned, he's like a diesel. He can go a long time in the same tempo. And Georgians, they're well known for having lack of physique. You know, they're not very good in conditioning or something. They're very like technique-oriented, like fighters. Yeah. So then he did even more miracle. He took out a main contender for the gold. He took out Leandro Guerra, who is like one of the most genius and talented players. So, you know, those personal clashes, they're not necessarily representing the actual the level, you know, like I said. So that's my theory. That's how Japan, Russia, all those countries, that's how they identify a player for Olympic Games. It's very tricky because you cannot really, like, you cannot decide.
You can't look at matchups, right?
Yes, you cannot look. You have to look how people do
separate. Because, I mean, that's a common thing, right? Because you might, in your same country, in your same weight class, you may match up with a guy poorly, but in terms of your chances for the Olympic Games, you might be the guy.
Travis Stevens, he had his peak already, I believe. And could he done better? Yes, but you know, if you look at his competition where he had top players, like when he had best elite players in his weight class, like in the same competition, I know he could beat anyone. He could be the number one on a given day. And like in London, he did miracle. He beat two very best players, right? But can he beat three or four of them? I don't think so.
I don't like how you call it miracle, but yeah, let's call it unlikely.
Okay.
Unlikely.
Okay, I'm sorry, yes. It's on bet on my side. I shouldn't call it miracle. I mean, but it was kind of surprising. You know, based on the previous results, based on overall results, I think it was very like unexpected. So it's a huge credit to Travis Stevens that he was able to do it.
So in a certain sense, while his Olympic Games ended in a draw with Ole Bischoff, the fifth place that he got is actually a huge accomplishment for an American player in the 81 kg division. I mean, that's one of the toughest divisions in judo, and it's tough.
And like you said, it's very, and what you said, it's another issue what not many people understand. Like judo, except like heavyweight, it's probably one of the most competitive sport. Like the greatest people, like Ilya Vyzhonteraya, they're losing. Each weight class has a top three, top five elite players, right? And I believe that Travis is actually top elite player in his weight class. However, do I think he's very top? I don't. I think he's a strong number four, number five. But I believe there is a guy like Kim Ji-boom. I think he's a machine.
It's very tough. So it's very tough to beat the number one, two, and three.
Yeah.
But a girl can dream. I'm the girl. I'm the girl in that situation.
I really hope he can do it. At the same time, don't take me wrong. I'm a big fan of Travis Stevens. It's another thing. You know, I know that guy Ali, whom we mentioned, after living in Kansas without having that practice on a high level, he went to world championship, and in his first match he went against Ukrainian European champion Vladimir Soroka, that kid who killed Nick DelPopolo with huge society. So that video, it's amazing. So and he threw Ali with a huge society for magic upon. And you know, I had some like kind of almost conflict conversation with my friend because people love him and Ali is my good friend and we have some shared friends, and those guys was asking me, what do you think about Ali's chances? And I would say, I don't think he can win. And they're like, oh man, you mean it's our friend? I said, so what? I love Ali. I wish the best, but I know
that's the truth,
I have some idea about how judo world works, you know? I know there is some kind of like, it's always chance, but at the same time, it's a very systematic, like a system what you can expect based on the like events.
And so, and also based on the system you come up in, which is why, again, it's remarkable that Travis and Nick DelPopolo and Kayla Harrison are all like metal, you know, they're doing anything at all in the world.
Yes. Kayla Harrison, by the way, the one U.S. player who is actually the top player in her weight class. Like, Kayla Harrison can lose on a given day because I believe she has a very tough matchup. Her weight class is very interesting. They have four players which are pretty much equal. It's a Brazilian girl, Mayra Aguiar. They have like several great matches with Harrison, and that's a Japanese chick, I forget her name, and a French girl, Tachimel. But I believe that Kayla Harrison is actually number one in that weight class, along with the Brazilian Mayra. Others. So she can lose sometime, but for the most of the part, she will win her weight classes all the time, you know.
And so speaking of the girls, I have the one last question for you to close it off for the day. Is something I was thinking about, you know, I posted on Facebook. I usually try not to post this kind of stupid shit, but I posted a poll saying, if you were to choose Olympics, Nobel Prize, or a happy marriage, which would you choose? It's the stupidest poll. It's like, it's one of those things that you know, like a million people comment on. But it's, it made me think, you know, most people chose happy marriage. In your experience, like, do a lot of these Olympians have a relationship? Are they able to maintain a successful relationship with a girl or a guy, whatever?
I think, again, it depends on the country. Like, if you look at the Kayla Harrison, what her Olympic medal cost her when she got in the, like, exchange. She pretty much got not much. To be honest, she got, like, $20,000 or $25,000, right? She got some few wins. But if you think what it cost her, right? It cost her, like,
everything.
Sacrifice a lot. Yes, everything. Then if you look at Mansoor Esaev, who's got compoundly like $1.3 million,
right?
And so eventually he has, besides this, he has amazing like apartment, like he drives like those huge nice Mercedes plus new Audi and all the stuff. Then Olympic Games gave him a lot. Olympic Games is actually key point for his personal life and relationship. So that's the same thing. Like Teddy Riner, when he's a star in his country and he's on the posters in the center of in downtown of Paris, right, along with soccer stars, then I'm pretty sure it's helpful. So it's very highly dependent on the country and what.
That's funny. You know, I didn't really think of it in that sense. I thought money wouldn't be.
Come on, money is a, you know, it's very interesting. I like the phrasing. I think it's it's a Russian phrase which says the money is not the reason of happiness. You know, like money wouldn't give you happiness. But then they have a new modification of this, that money is not happiness if you already have them, you know? So, I mean, if you don't have money, right, it's everything. I really like your recent post when you talk about that Samsung like challenge. Like you said, you have that level of income to cover your needs, right?
Yes.
You don't really care about much more. But try imagine if you don't have it. Then it's going to be struggle, right?
Yes.
So you need to have money to cover your basic needs. And I think this is, again, coming, getting back to issue of U.S. judo, even those people who really fight hard for U.S., for country, they don't really have even opportunity to cover the very basic needs. And everybody wants to have like nice car, nice house and stuff. Like, you know, especially those guys, because they pretty much, they're supposed to be higher than average person. And unfortunately, what do they give them? It's actually less than average person.
Right. So, but you think the hard training, you know, for a lot of these guys, it's twice a day or three times a day. You think they can still come home and be a normal human being?
Like, and come home and be good husband, good
husband,
good wife.
Or even a friend. Do they have like a social life off the mat?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm not sure about like how this works in America when they have this financial obstacles. But I know Zantara has amazing life. I know that's for sure because we kind of like good friends and talks a lot. And I know he has a lot of social events going on. He's invited by cities and by different cities, by like companies, rich people for different events. He's like celebrity. You know, it's the same like does Michael Jordan has nice life because of basketball? Yes, he does, right? He's a famous, he's celebrity. He has a bunch of famous, interesting things going on. Same here, like Danny Reiner, stuff like that.
I guess that's going to be our moral for the day is, you know, money can't buy happiness when you have money.
Yes. Okay, right. Brother. We'll talk about this more.
Okay. All right, man. Good talking to you.
Okay, good talking to you.